I'd say you were full of shit. Armitage nodded. Then I'd ask what your terms were.
Not very different than what you're used to, Case.
Let the man get some sleep, Armitage,
Molly said from her futon, the components of the Fletcher spread on the silk like some expensive puzzle.
He's coming apart at the seams.
Terms, Case said. And now. Right now. He was still shivering. He couldn't stop shivering.
The clinic was nameless, expensively appointed, a cluster of sleek pavilions separated by small formal gardens. He remembered the place from the round he'd made his first month in Sheba.
Scared, Case. You're real scared.
It was Sunday afternoon, and he stood with Molly in a sort of courtyard. White boulders, a stand of green bamboo, black gravel raked into smooth waves. A gardener, a thing like a large metal crab, was tending the bamboo.
It'll work, Case. You got no idea the kind of stuff Armitage has. Like he's gonna pay these nerve boys for fixing you with the program he's giving them to tell them how to do it. He'll put them 3 years ahead of the competition. You got any idea what that's worth?
She hooked thumbs in the belt loops of her leather jeans and rocked backward on the lacquered heels of cherry red cowboy boots. The narrow toes were sheathed in bright Mexican silver. The lenses were empty quicksilver, regarding him with an insect calm.
You're street samurai, he said. How long you work for him?
Couple of months.
What about before that?
For somebody else. Working girl, you know?
He nodded.
Funny, Case.
What's funny?
It's like I know you. That profile he's got, I know how you're wired.
You don't know me, sister.
You're okay, Case. What got you, it's just called bad luck.
How about him? He okay, Molly?
The robot crab moved toward them, picking its way over the waves of gravel. Its bronze carapace might have been 1,000 years old. When it was within a meter of her boots, it fired a burst of light, then froze for an instant, analyzing data obtained.
What I always think about first, Case, is my own sweet ass.
The crab had altered course to avoid her, but she kicked it with a smooth precision, the silver boot tip clanging on the carapace. The thing fell on its back, but the bronze limbs soon righted it.
Case sat on one of the boulders, scuffing at the symmetry of the gravel waves with the toes of his shoes. He began to search his pockets for cigarettes.
In your shirt, she said.
You want to answer my question?
He fished a wrinkled Yehewan from the pack, and she lit it for him with a thin slab of German steel that looked as though it belonged on an operating table.
Well, I'll tell you, the man's definitely onto something. He's got big money now, and he's never had it before, and he gets more all the time.
Case noticed a certain tension around her mouth.
Or maybe something's on to him.
She shrugged. What's that mean?
I don't know exactly. I know I don't know who or what we're really working for.
He stared at the twin mirrors. Leaving the Hilton Saturday morning, he'd gone back to Cheap Hotel and slept for 10 hours. Then he'd taken a long and pointless walk along the port security perimeter, watching the gulls turn circles beyond the chain link. If she'd followed him, she'd done a good job of it. He'd avoided Night City. He'd waited in the coffin for Armitage's call. Now this quiet courtyard, Sunday afternoon, this girl with a gymnast's body and conjurer's hands.
If you'll come in now, sir, the anesthetist is waiting to meet you.
The technician bowed, turned, and re-entered the clinic, without waiting to see if Case would follow. Cold steel odor. Ice caressed his spine. Lost. So small amid that dark. Hands grown cold. body image fading down corridors of television sky. Voices. Then black fire found the branching tributaries of the nerves, pain beyond anything to which the name of pain is given. Hold still, don't move. And Rats was there, and Linda Lee, Wage, and Lonnie Zone, 100 faces from the neon forest, sailors and hustlers and whores, where the sky is poisoned silver, beyond chain link and the prison of the skull.
God damn, don't you move.
Where the sky faded from hissing static to the non-color of the matrix, and he glimpsed the shuriken, his stars.
Stop it, Case. I gotta find your vein.
She was straddling his chest, a blue plastic serrette in one hand.
You don't lie still, I'll slit your fucking throat. You're still full of endorphin inhibitors.
He woke and found her stretched beside him in the dark. His neck was brittle, made of twigs. There was a steady pulse of pain midway down his spine. Images formed and reformed, a flickering montage of the sprawl's towers and ragged fuller domes, dim figures moving toward him in the shade beneath a bridge or overpass.
Case? It's Wednesday, Case.
She moved, rolling over, reaching across him. A breast brushed his upper arm. He heard her tear the foil seal from a bottle of water and drink.
Here.
She put the bottle in his hand.
I can see in the dark, Case. Microchannel image amps in my glasses.
My back hurts.
That's where they replaced your fluid. Changed your blood, too. Blood 'cause you got a new pancreas thrown into the deal, and some new tissue patched into your liver. The nerve stuff, I don't know. Lots of injections. They didn't have to open anything up for the main show.
She settled back beside him.
It's 2:43:12 a.m., Case. Got a readout chipped into my optic nerve.
He sat up and tried to sip from the bottle. Gagged, coughed, lukewarm water spraying his chest and thighs.
I got a punch deck,
he heard himself say. He was groping for his clothes.
I gotta know,
she laughed. Small, strong hands gripped his upper arms.
Sorry, hotshot. 8-day wait. Your nervous system would fall out on the floor if you jacked in now. Doctor's orders. Besides, they figure it worked. Check you in a day or so.
He lay down again.
Where are we?
Home. Cheap hotel.
Where's Armitage?
Hilton. Selling beads to the natives or something. We're out of here soon, man. Amsterdam, Paris, then back to the sprawl.
She touched his shoulder.
Roll over. I give a good massage.
He lay on his stomach, arms stretched forward, tips of his fingers against the walls of the coffin. She settled over the small of his back, kneeling on the temperphone, the leather jeans cool against his skin. Her fingers brushed his neck.
How come you're not at the Hilton?
She answered him by reaching back, between his thighs, and gently encircling his scrotum with thumb and forefinger. She rocked there for a minute in the dark, erect above him, her other hand on his neck. The leather of her jeans creaked softly with the movement. Case shifted, feeling himself harden against the temperphone. His head throbbed, but the brittleness in his neck seemed to retreat. He raised himself on one elbow, rolled, sank back against the foam, pulling her down, licking her breasts, small, hard nipples sliding wet across his cheek. He found the zip on the leather jeans and tugged it down.
It's okay, she said. I can see.
Sound of the jeans peeling down. She struggled beside him until she could kick them away. She threw a leg across him, and he touched her face. Unexpected hardness of the implanted lenses.
Don't,
she said.
Fingerprints.
Now she straddled him again, took his hand and closed it over her, his thumb along the cleft of her buttocks, his fingers spread across the labia. As she began to lower herself, the images came pulsing back, the faces, fragments of neon arriving and receding. She slid down around him, and his back arched convulsively. She rode him that way, impaling herself, slipping down on him again and again until they had both come, his orgasm flaring blue in a timeless space, a vastness like the Matrix, where the faces were shredded and blown away down hurricane corridors, and her inner thighs were strong and wet against his hips. On Ninsei, a thinner, weekday version of the crowd went through the motions of the dance. Waves of sound rolled from the arcades and pachinko parlors. Case glanced into the chat and saw Zone watching over his girls in the warm, beer-smelling twilight. Rats was tending bar.
"You seen Wage, Rats?"
"Not tonight."
Rats made a point of raising an eyebrow at Molly.
"You see him. Tell him I got his money."
"Luck changing, my artiste."
"Too soon to tell." "Well, I gotta see this guy," Case said, watching his reflection in her glasses. "I got biz to cancel out of."
"Armitage won't like it, I let you out of my sight."
She stood beneath Dean's melting clock, hands on her hips.
"The guy won't talk to me if you're there. Dean I don't give two shits about, he takes care of himself. But I got people who'll just go under if I walk out of Chiba cold. It's my people, you know?"
Her mouth hardened. She shook her head.
"I got people in Singapore, Tokyo connections in Shinjuku and Asakusa, and they'll go down, understand?"
He lied, his hand on the shoulder of her black jacket.
Five minutes. By your clock, okay?"
"Not what I'm paid for."
"What you're paid for is one thing. Me letting some tight friends die because you're too literal about your instructions is something else."
"Bullshit. Tight friends, my ass. You're going in there to check us out with your smuggler."
She put a booted foot up on the dust-covered Kandinsky coffee table.
"Ah, Case, sport. It does look as though your companion there is definitely armed, aside from having a fair amount of silicon in her head. What is this about, exactly?"
Dean's ghostly cough seemed to hang in the air between them.
"Hold on, Julie. Anyway, I'll be coming in alone." "You can be sure of that, old son. Wouldn't have it any other way."
"Okay,"
she said.
"Go. But 5 minutes. Any more and I'll come in and cool your tight friend permanently. And while you're at it, you try to figure something out."
"What's that?"
"Why I'm doing you the favor."
She turned and walked out, past the stacked white modules of preserved ginger.
"Keeping stranger company than usual, Case?"
asked Julie.
"Julie, she's gone. You want to let me in? Please, Julie?"
The bolts worked.
"Slowly, Case,"
said the voice.
"Turn on the works, Julie. All the stuff in the desk,"
Case said, taking his place in the swivel chair.
"It's on all the time,"
Dean said mildly, taking a gun from behind the exposed works of his old mechanical typewriter and aiming it carefully at Case. It was a belly gun, a magnum revolver with the barrel sawn down to a nub. The front of the trigger guard had been cut away, and the grips wrapped with what looked like old masking tape. Case thought it looked very strange in Dean's manicured pink hands.
"Just taking care, you understand. Nothing personal. Now, tell me what you want." "I need a history lesson, Julie, and a go-to on somebody. What's moving, old son?"
Dean's shirt was candy-striped cotton, the collar white and rigid, like porcelain.
"Me, Julie. I'm leaving. Gone. But do me the favor, okay?"
"Go to on whom, old son?"
"Gaijin name of Armitage. Sweet in the Hilton."
Dean put the pistol down.
"Sit still, Case."
He tapped something out on a lap terminal.
"It seems as though you know as much as my net does, Case.
This gentleman seems to have a temporary arrangement with the Yakuza, and the Sons of the Neon Chrysanthemum have ways of screening their allies from the likes of me. I wouldn't have it any other way. Now history. You said history.
He picked up the gun again, but didn't point it directly at Case.
What sort of history?
The war. You in the war, Julie?
The war? What's there to know? Lasted 3 weeks.
Screaming Fist.
Famous. Don't they teach you history these days? Great bloody post-war political football that was. Watergate it all to hell and back. Your brass Case, your sprawl-side brass in, where was it, McLean? In the bunkers, all of that. Great scandal. Wasted a fair bit of patriotic young flesh in order to test some new technology. They knew about the Russians' defenses, it came out later. Knew about the EMPs, magnetic pulse weapons. Sent these fellows in regardless, just to see. Dean shrugged. Turkey shoot for Ivan.
Any of those guys make it out?
Christ, Dean said. It's been bloody years. Though I do think a few did.
One of the teams. Got hold of a Sov gunship. Helicopter, you know. Flew it back to Finland. Didn't have entry codes, of course, and shot hell out of the Finnish defense forces in the process. Special forces types.
Dean sniffed.
Bloody hell.
Case nodded. The smell of preserved ginger was overwhelming.
I spent the war in Lisbon, you know, Dean said, putting the gun down. Lovely place, Lisbon.
In the service, Julie?
Hardly.
Though I did see action.
Dean smiled his pink smile.
Wonderful what a war can do for one's markets.
Thanks, Julie. I owe you one.
Hardly, Case. And goodbye.
And later he'd tell himself that the evening at Sammy's had felt wrong from the start, that even as he'd followed Molly along that corridor, shuffling through a trampled mulch of ticket stubs and foam cups, he'd sensed it. Linda's death, waiting. They'd gone to the Namban after he'd seen Dean and paid off his debt to Wage with a roll of Armitage's new yen. Wage had liked that, his boys had liked it less, and Molly had grinned at Case's side with a kind of ecstatic, feral intensity, obviously longing for one of them to make a move. Then he'd taken her back to the chat for a drink.
"Wasting your time, cowboy,"
Molly said when Case took an octagon from the pocket of his jacket.
"How's that? You want one?"
He held the pill out to her.
"Your new pancreas, Case, and those plugs in your liver. Armitage had them designed to bypass that shit."
She tapped the octagon with one burgundy nail.
"You're biochemically incapable of getting off on amphetamine or cocaine."
"Shit,"
he said. He looked at the octagon, then at her.
"Eat it. Eat a dozen. Nothing'll happen."
He did. Nothing did. 3 beers later, she was asking Rats about the fights.
"Sammy's,"
Rat said.
"I'll pass," Case said. "I hear they kill each other down there."
An hour later, she was buying tickets from a skinny tie and a white t-shirt and baggy rugby shorts. Sammy's was an inflated dome behind a portside warehouse, taut gray fabric reinforced with a net of thin steel cables. The corridor, with a door at either end, was a crude airlock preserving the pressure differential that supported the dome. Fluorescent rings were screwed to the plywood ceiling at intervals, but most of them had been broken. The air was damp and close with the smell of sweat and concrete. None of that prepared him for the arena, the crowd, the tense hush, the towering puppets of light beneath the dome. Concrete sloped away in tiers to a kind of central stage, a raised circle ringed with a glittering thicket of projection gear. No light but the holograms that shifted and flickered above the ring, reproducing the movements of the two men below. Strata of cigarette smoke rose from the tiers, drifting until it struck current set up by the blowers that supported the dome. No sound but the muted purring of the blowers and the amplified breathing of the fighters. Reflected colors flowed across Molly's lenses as the men circled. The holograms were 10 power magnifications. At 10, the knives they held were just under a meter long. The knife fighter's grip is the fencer's grip, Case remembered, the fingers curled, thumb aligned with blade. The knives seemed to move of their own accord, gliding with a ritual lack of urgency through the arcs and passes of their dance, point passing point, as the men waited for an opening. Molly's upturned face was smooth and still, watching.
"I'll go find us some food," Case said.
She nodded, lost in contemplation of the dance.
He didn't like this place. He turned and walked back into the shadows. Too dark, too quiet.
The crowd he saw was mostly Japanese, not really a Night City crowd. Techs, down from the arcologies. He supposed that meant the arena had the approval of some corporate recreational committee. He wondered briefly what it would be like, working all your life for one zaibatsu. Company housing, company hymn, company funeral. He'd made nearly a full circuit of the dome before he found the food stalls. He bought yakitori on skewers and two tall, waxy cartons of beer. Glancing up at the holograms, he saw that blood laced one figure's chest. Thick brown sauce trickled down the skewers and over his knuckles. 7 days, and he'd jack in. If he closed his eyes now, he'd see the Matrix. Shadows twisted as the holograms swung through their dance. Then the fear began to knot between his shoulders. A cold trickle of sweat worked its way down and across his ribs. The operation hadn't worked. He was still here, still meat. No Molly waiting, her eyes locked on the circling knives. No Armitage waiting in the Hilton with tickets and a new passport and money. It was all some dream, some pathetic fantasy. Hot tears blurred his vision. Blood sprayed from a jugular and a red gout of light, and now the crowd was screaming, rising, screaming, as one figure crumpled, the hologram fading, flickering. Raw edge of vomit in his throat. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, opened them, and saw Linda Lee step past him, her gray eyes blind with fear. She wore the same French fatigues, and gone, into shadow. Pure mindless reflex. He threw the beer and chicken down and ran after her. He might have called her name, but he'd never be sure. Afterimage of a single hair-fine line of red light, seared concrete beneath the thin soles of his shoes. Her white sneakers flashing, close to the curving wall now, and again the ghost line of the laser branded across his eye, bobbing in his vision as he ran. Someone tripped him. Concrete tore his palms. He rolled and kicked, failing to connect. A thin boy, spiked blonde hair lit from behind in a rainbow nimbus, was leaning over him. Above the stage, a figure turned, knife held high, to the cheering crowd. The boy smiled and drew something from his sleeve. A razor, etched in red as a third beam blinked past them into the dark. Case saw the razor dipping for his throat like a dowser's wand. The face was erased in a humming cloud of microscopic explosions. Molly's flechettes, at 20 rounds per second. The boy coughed once, convulsively, and toppled across Case's legs. He was walking toward the stalls, into the shadows. He looked down, expecting to see that needle of ruby emerge from his chest. Nothing. He found her. She was thrown down at the foot of a concrete pillar, eyes closed. There was a smell of cooked meat. The crowd was chanting the winner's name. A beer vendor was wiping his taps with a dark rag. One white sneaker had come off somehow and lay beside her head. Follow the wall, curve of concrete, hands in pockets. Keep walking. Past unseeing faces, every eye raised to the victor's image above the ring. Once a seamed European face danced in the glare of a match, lips pursed around the short stem of a metal pipe, tang of hashish. Case walked on, feeling nothing.
Case.
Her mirrors emerged from deeper shadow.
You okay?
Something mewled and bubbled in the dark behind her. He shook his head.
Fight's over, Case. Time to go home.
He tried to walk past her, back into the dark, where something was dying. She stopped him with a hand on his chest.
Friends of your tight friend killed your girl for you. You haven't done too well for friends in this town, have you? We got a partial profile on that old bastard when we did you, man. He'd fry anybody for a few new ones. The one back there said they got onto her when she was trying to fence your ram. Just cheaper for them to kill her and take it. Save a little money. I got the one who had the laser to tell me all about it. Coincidence we were here, but I had to make sure.
Her mouth was hard, lips pressed into a thin line. Case felt as though his brain were jammed.
Who?
He said.
Who sent them?
She passed him a blood-flecked bag of preserved ginger. He saw that her hands were sticky with blood. Back in the shadows, someone made wet sounds and died. After the post-operative check at the clinic, Molly took him to the port. Armitage was waiting. He'd chartered a hovercraft. The last Case saw of Chiba were the dark angles of the arcologies. Then a mist closed over the black water and the drifting shoals of waste. Part 2. The Shopping Expedition. Chapter 3. Home. Home was Bama, the sprawl, the Boston-Atlanta metropolitan axis. Program a map to display frequency of data exchange, every 1,000 megabytes a single pixel on a very large screen. Manhattan and Atlanta burn solid white. Then they start to pulse, the rate of traffic threatening to overload your simulation. Your map is about to go Nova. Cool it down, up your scale. Each pixel 1,000,000 megabytes. At 100,000,000 megabytes per second, you begin to make out certain blocks in Midtown Manhattan, outlines of 100-year-old industrial parks ringing the old core of Atlanta. Case woke from a dream of airports, of Molly's dark leathers moving ahead of him through the concourses of Narita, Schiphol, Orly. He watched himself buy a flat plastic flask of Danish vodka at some kiosk an hour before dawn. Somewhere down in the sprawl's ferro-concrete roots, a train drove a column of stale air through a tunnel. The train itself was silent, gliding over its induction cushion, but displaced air made the tunnel sing, bass down into subsonics. Vibration reached the room where he lay and caused dust to rise from the cracks in the desiccated parquet floor. Opening his eyes, he saw Molly, naked and just out of reach across an expanse of very new pink temper foam. Overhead, sunlight filtered through the soot-stained grid of a skylight. 1 half-meter square of glass had been replaced with chipboard, a fat gray cable emerging there to dangle within a few centimeters of the floor. He lay on his side and watched her breathe, her breasts, the sweep of a flank defined with the functional elegance of a warplane's fuselage. Her body was spare, neat, the muscles like a dancer's. The room was large. He sat up. The room was empty, aside from the wide pink bed slab and 2 nylon bags, new and identical, that lay beside it. Blank walls, no windows, a single white-painted steel fire door. The walls were coated with countless layers of white latex paint. Factory space. He knew this kind of room, this kind of building. The tenants would operate in the interzone where art wasn't quite crime, crime not quite art. He was home. He swung his feet to the floor. It was made of little blocks of wood, some missing, others loose. His head ached. He remembered Amsterdam, another room in the old city section of the Centrum, buildings centuries old. Molly back from the canal's edge with orange juice and eggs. Armitage off on some cryptic foray, the two of them walking alone past Dam Square to a bar she knew on a Damrak thoroughfare. Paris was a blurred dream. Shopping. She'd taken him shopping. He stood, pulling on a wrinkled pair of new black jeans that lay at his feet, and knelt beside the bags. The first one he opened was Molly's, neatly folded clothing and small, expensive-looking gadgets. The second was stuffed with things he didn't remember buying, books, tapes, a SimStim deck, clothing with French and Italian labels. Beneath the green T-shirt, he discovered a flat, origami-wrapped package, recycled Japanese paper. The paper tore when he picked it up. A bright nine-pointed star fell, to stick upright in a crack in the parquet.
"Souvenir," Molly said. "I noticed you were always looking at him."
He turned and saw her sitting cross-legged on the bed, sleepily scratching her stomach with burgundy nails. "Someone's coming later to secure the place," Armitage said. He stood in the open doorway with an old-fashioned magnetic key in his hand. Molly was making coffee on a tiny German stove she took from her bag.
"I can do it," she said. "I got enough gear already. Infrascan perimeter, screamers."
"No," he said, closing the door. "I want it tight."
"Suit yourself."
She wore a dark mesh T-shirt tucked into baggy black cotton pants.
"You ever the heat, Mr. Armitage?"
Case asked, from where he sat, his back against a wall. Armitage was no taller than Case, but with his broad shoulders and military posture, he seemed to fill the doorway. He wore a somber Italian suit. In his right hand, he held a briefcase of soft black calf. The Special Forces earring was gone. The handsome, inexpressive features offered the routine beauty of the cosmetic boutiques, a conservative amalgam of the past decade's leading media faces. The pale glitter of his eyes heightened the effect of a mask. Case began to regret the question.
"Lots of forces types wound up cops, I mean. Or corporate security,"
Case added uncomfortably. Molly handed him a steaming mug of coffee.
"That number you had them do on my pancreas, that's like a cop routine."
Armitage closed the door and crossed the room to stand in front of Case.
"You're a lucky boy, Case. You should thank me."
"Should I?"
Case blew noisily on his coffee.
"You needed a new pancreas. The one we bought for you frees you from a dangerous dependency."
"Thanks, but I was enjoying that dependency."
"Good, because you have a new one."
"How's that?"
Case looked up from his coffee. Armitage was smiling. "You have 15 toxin sacs bonded to the lining of various main arteries, Case. They're dissolving. Very slowly, but they definitely are dissolving. Each one contains a mycotoxin. You're already familiar with the effect of that mycotoxin. It was the one your former employers gave you in Memphis." Case blinked up at the smiling mask. "You have time to do what I'm hiring you for, Case, but that's all. Do the job and I can inject you with an enzyme that will dissolve the bond without opening the sacs. Then you'll need a blood change. Otherwise, the sacs melt and you're back where I found you. So you see, Case, you need us. You need us as badly as you did when we scraped you up from the gutter." Case looked at Molly. She shrugged. "Now go down to the freight elevator and bring up the cases you find there." Armitage handed him the magnetic key.
"Go on.
You'll enjoy this, Case. Like Christmas morning." Summer in the sprawl, the mall crowds swaying like wind-blown grass, a field of flesh shot through with sudden eddies of need and gratification. He sat beside Molly in filtered sunlight on the rim of a dry concrete fountain, letting the endless stream of faces recapitulate the stages of his life. First a child with hooded eyes, a street boy, hands relaxed and ready at his sides. Then a teenager, face smooth and cryptic beneath red glasses. Case remembered fighting on a rooftop at 17, silent combat in the rose glow of the dawn geodesics. He shifted on the concrete, feeling it rough and cool through the thin black denim. Nothing here like the electric dance of Ninsei. This was different commerce, a different rhythm, in the smell of fast food and perfume and fresh summer sweat. With his deck waiting, back in the loft, an Anno Sendai Cyberspace 7. They'd left the place littered with the abstract white forms of the foam packing units, with crumpled plastic film and hundreds of tiny foam beads. The Anno Sendai, next year's most expensive Hosaka computer, a Sony monitor, a dozen discs of corporate-grade ice, a Braun coffee maker. Armitage had only waited for Case's approval of each piece. "Where'd he go?" Case had asked Molly. "He likes hotels, big ones, near airports, if he can manage it. Let's go down to the street." She'd zipped herself into an old surplus vest with a dozen oddly shaped pockets and put on a huge pair of black plastic sunglasses that completely covered her mirrored insets. "You know about that toxin shit before?" he asked her by the fountain. She shook her head. "You think it's true?"
"Maybe, maybe not. Works either way."
"You know any way I can find out?"
"No,"
she said, her right hand coming up to form the jive for silence.
"That kind of kink's too subtle to show up on a scan."
Then her fingers moved again. "Wait."
"And you don't care that much anyway. I saw you stroking that Sendai, man. It was pornographic."
She laughed. "So what's he got on you? How's he got the working girl kinked?"
"Professional pride, baby, that's all."
And again the sign for silence.
"We're going to get some breakfast, okay? Eggs, real bacon. Probably kill you. You've been eating that rebuilt Chiba krill for so long. Yeah, come on. We'll tube into Manhattan and get us a real breakfast."
Lifeless neon spelled out Metro Holographics in dusty capitals of glass tubing. Case picked at a shred of bacon that had lodged between his front teeth. He'd given up asking her where they were going and why. Jabs in the ribs and the sign for silence were all he'd gotten in reply. She talked about the season's fashions, about sports, about a political scandal in California he'd never heard of. He looked around the deserted dead-end street. A sheet of newsprint went cartwheeling past the intersection. Freak winds in the east side. Something to do with convection and an overlap in the domes. Case peered through the window at the dead sign. Her sprawl wasn't his sprawl, he decided. She'd led him through a dozen bars and clubs he'd never seen before, taking care of business, usually with no more than a nod, maintaining connections. Something was moving in the shadows behind Metro Holographics. The door was a sheet of corrugated roofing. In front of it, Molly's hands flowed through an intricate sequence of jive that he couldn't follow. He caught the sign for cash, a thumb brushing the tip of the forefinger. The door swung inward, and she led him into the smell of dust. They stood in a clearing, dense tangles of junk rising on either side, to walls lined with shelves of crumbling paperbacks. The junk looked like something that had grown there, a fungus of twisted metal and plastic. He could pick out individual objects, but then they seemed to blur back into the mass, the guts of a television so old it was studded with the glass stumps of vacuum tubes, a crumpled dish antenna, a brown fiber canister stuffed with corroded lengths of alloy tubing. An enormous pile of old magazines had cascaded into the open area, flesh of lost summers staring blindly up as he followed her back through a narrow canyon of impacted scrap. He heard the door close behind them. He didn't look back. The tunnel ended with an ancient army blanket tacked across a doorway. White light flooded out as Molly ducked past it. Four square walls of blank white plastic, ceiling to match, floored with white hospital tile molded in a non-slip pattern of small raised discs. In the center stood a square, white-painted wooden table and four white folding chairs. The man who stood blinking now in the doorway behind them, the blanket draping one shoulder like a cape, seemed to have been designed in a wind tunnel. His ears were very small, plastered flat against his narrow skull, and his large front teeth, revealed in something that wasn't quite a smile, were canted sharply backward. He wore an ancient tweed jacket and held a handgun of some kind in his left hand. He peered at them, blinked, and dropped the gun into a jacket pocket. He gestured to Case, pointed at a slab of white plastic that leaned near the doorway. Case crossed to it and saw that it was a solid sandwich of circuitry, nearly a centimeter thick. He helped the man lift it and position it in the doorway. Quick nicotine-stained fingers secured it with a white Velcro border. A hidden exhaust fan began to purr.
"Time," the man said, straightening up, "and counting. You know the rate, Moll."
"We need a scan, Finn, for implants."
"So get over there between the pylons. Stand on the tape. Straighten up, yeah. Now turn around. Give me a full 360.
Case watched her rotate between two fragile-looking stands studded with sensors. The man took a small monitor from his pocket and squinted at it.
"Something new in your head?" "Yeah. Silicon. Coat of pyrolytic carbons. A clock, right? Your glasses give me the read they always have. Low-temp isotropic carbons. Better biocompatibility with pyrolytics. But that's your business, right? Same with your claws."
"Get over here, Case."
He saw a scuffed X in black on the white floor.
"Turn around. Slow."
"Guy's a virgin," the man shrugged. "Some cheap dental work is all."
"You read for biologicals?"
Molly unzipped her green vest and took off the dark glasses.
"You think this is the Mayo? Climb on the table, kid. We'll run a little biopsy."
He laughed, showing more of his yellow teeth.
"Nah, Finn's word, sweet meat. You got no little bugs, no cortex bombs. You want me to shut the screen down?"
"Just for as long as it takes you to leave, Finn. Then we want full screen for as long as we want it."
"Hey, that's fine by the Finn, Moll. You're only paying by the second."
They sealed the door behind him, and Molly turned one of the white chairs around and sat on it, chin resting on crossed forearms.
"We talk now. This is as private as I can afford."
"What about?"
"What we're doing."
"What are we doing?"
"Working for Armitage."
"And you're saying this isn't for his benefit?"
"Yeah. I saw your profile, Case, and I've seen the rest of our shopping list once. You ever work with the dead?"
"No."
He watched his reflection in her glasses.
"I could, I guess. I'm good at what I do."
The present tense made him nervous.
"You know that the Dixie Flatline's dead?"
He nodded.
"Heart, I heard."
"You'll be working with his construct."
She smiled.
"Taught you the ropes, huh? Him and Quine? I know Quine, by the way. Real asshole."
"Somebody's got a recording of McCoy Pauly? Who?"
Now Case sat and rested his elbows on the table.
"I can't see it. He'd never have sat still for it." "SenseNet. Paid him mega, you bet your ass."
"Quine dead, too?"
"No such luck. He's in Europe. He doesn't come into this."
"Well, if we can get the flatline, we're home free. He was the best. You know he died brain death 3 times?
She nodded.
flatlined on his EEG. Showed me tapes. Boy, I was dazed.
Look, Case, I've been trying to suss out who it is backing Armitage since I signed on. But it doesn't feel like a Zaibatsu, a government, or some Yakuza subsidiary. Armitage gets orders. Like something tells him to go off to Chiba, pick up a pillhead who's making one last wobble through the burnout belt, and trade a program for the operation that'll fix him up. We could have bought 20 world-class cowboys for what the market was ready to pay for that surgical program. You were good, but not that good.
She scratched the side of her nose. Obviously it makes sense to somebody, he said. Somebody big.
Don't let me hurt your feelings, she grinned. We're going to be pulling one hardcore run, Case, just to get the Flatlines construct. SenseNet has it locked in a library vault uptown, tighter than an eel's ass, Case. Now, SenseNet, they got all their new material for the fall season locked in there, too. Steal that and we'd be richer than shit. But no, we got to get us the Flatline and nothing else. Weird.
Yeah, it's all weird. You're weird, this hole's weird, and who's the weird little gopher outside in the hall?
Finn's an old connection of mine. Fence, mostly. Software. This privacy biz is a sideline. But I got Armitage to let him be our tech here, so when he shows up later, you never saw him. Got it?
So what's Armitage got dissolving inside you?
I'm an easy make. She smiled. Anybody any good at what they do, that's what they are, right? You got a jack, I got a tussle.
He stared at her. So tell me what you know about Armitage.
For starters, nobody named Armitage took part in any Screaming Fist. I checked. But that doesn't mean much. He doesn't look like any of the pics of the guys who got out.
She shrugged. Big deal. And starters is all I got. She drummed her nails on the back of the chair.
But you are a cowboy, aren't you? I mean, maybe you could have a little look around.
She smiled. He'd kill me.
Maybe, maybe not. I think he needs you, Case, and real bad. Besides, you're a clever John, no? You can winkle him, sure.
What else is on that list you mentioned?
Toys, mostly for you. And one certified psychopath name of Peter Riviera. Real ugly customer.
Where's he?
Don't know, but he's one sick fuck, no lie. I saw his profile.
She made a face.
God, awful.
She stood up and stretched, cat-like.
So, we got an axis going, boy? We're together in this? Partners?
Case looked at her. I got a lot of choice, huh? She laughed.
You got it, cowboy.
The Matrix has its roots in primitive arcade games, said the voiceover, in early graphics programs and military experimentation with cranial jacks. On the Sony, a two-dimensional space war faded behind a forest of mathematically generated ferns, demonstrating the spatial possibilities of logarithmic spirals. Cold blue military footage burned through, lab animals wired into test systems, helmets feeding into fire control circuits of tanks and warplanes. Cyberspace, a consensual hallucination experienced daily by billions of legitimate operators in every nation, by children being taught mathematical concepts. A graphic representation of data abstracted from the banks of every computer in the human system. Unthinkable complexity. Lines of light ranged in the non-space of the mind. Clusters and constellations of data. Like city lights, receding.
What's that? Molly asked as he flipped the channel selector. Kid show. A discontinuous flood of images as the selector cycled. Off, he said to the Hosaka.
You want to try now, Case?
Wednesday. 8 days from waking in cheap hotel with Molly beside him.
You want me to go out, Case? Maybe easier for you alone?
He shook his head. No, stay. Doesn't matter. He settled the black terry sweatband across his forehead, careful not to disturb the flat Sendai dermatrodes. He stared back at the deck on his lap, not really seeing it, seeing instead the shop window on Ninsei, the chromed shuriken burning with reflected neon. He glanced up. On the wall, just above the Sony, he'd hung her gift, tacking it there with a yellow-headed drawing pin through the hole at its center. He closed his eyes, found the ridged face of the power stud. And in the blood-lit dark behind his eyes, silver phosphenes boiling in from the edge of space, hypnagogic images jerking past like film compiled from random frames, symbols, figures, faces, a blurred, fragmented mandala of visual information. Please, he prayed. Now. A gray disk, the color of Chiba sky. Now. Disk beginning to rotate, faster, becoming a sphere of paler gray, expanding, and flowed, flowered for him. Fluid neon origami trick, the unfolding of his distanceless home, his country, transparent 3D chessboard extending to infinity, inner eye opening to the stepped scarlet pyramid of the Eastern Seaboard Fission Authority burning beyond the green cubes of Mitsubishi Bank of America, and high and very far away he saw the spiral arms of military systems, forever beyond his reach. And somewhere he was laughing, in a white-painted loft, distant fingers caressing the deck, tears of release streaking his face. Molly was gone when he took the trodes off, and the loft was dark. He checked the time. He'd been in cyberspace for 5 hours. He carried the Ono Sendai to one of the new work tables and collapsed across the bed slab, pulling Molly's black silk sleeping bag over his head. The security package taped to the steel fire door bleeped twice. Entry requested, it said. Subject is cleared per my program. So open it. Case pulled the silk from his face and sat up as the door opened, expecting to see Molly or Armitage.
Christ, said a hoarse voice. I know that bitch can see in the dark.
A squat figure stepped in and closed the door.
Turn the lights on, okay?
Case scrambled off the slab and found the old-fashioned switch.
I'm the Finn,
said the Finn, and made a warning face at Case.
Case, pleased to meet you, I'm sure. I'm doing some hardware for your boss, it looks like.
The Finn fished a pack of Partagas from a pocket and lit one. The smell of Cuban tobacco filled the room. He crossed to the work table and glanced at the Ono Sendai.
Looks stock. Soon fix that. But here's your problem, kid.
He took a filthy manila envelope from inside his jacket, flicked ash on the floor, and extracted a featureless black rectangle from the envelope.
Goddamn factory prototypes,
he said, tossing the thing down on the table.
Cast him into a block of polycarbon. Can't get in with a laser without frying the works. Booby-trapped for X-ray, ultra-scan, God knows what else. We'll get in, but there's no rest for the wicked, right?
He folded the envelope with great care and tucked it away in an inside pocket.
What is it?
It's a flip-flop switch, basically. Wire it into your Sendai here. You can access live or recorded SimStim without having to jack out of the Matrix.
What for?
I haven't got a clue. No, I'm fitting Maul for a broadcast rig, though, so it's probably her sensorium you'll access.
The Finn scratched his chin.
So now you get to find out just how tight those jeans really are, huh?
Chapter 4 Case sat in the loft with the dermatrode strapped across his forehead, watching motes dance in the diluted sunlight that filtered through the grid overhead. A countdown was in progress in one corner of the monitor screen. Cowboys didn't get into SimStim, he thought, because it was basically a meat toy. He knew that the trodes he used and the little plastic tiara dangling from a SimStim deck were basically the same, and that the cyberspace matrix was actually a drastic simplification of the human sensorium, at least in terms of presentation, but SimStim itself struck him as a gratuitous multiplication of flesh input. The commercial stuff was edited, of course, so that if Tali Isham got a headache in the course of a segment, you didn't feel it. The screen bleeped a two-second warning. The new switch was patched into his Sendai with a thin ribbon of fiber optics. And one, and two, and... Cyberspace slid into existence from the cardinal points. Smooth, he thought, but not smooth enough. Have to work on it. Then he keyed the new switch. The abrupt jolt into other flesh. Matrix gone, a wave of sound and color. She was moving through a crowded street, past stalls vending discount software, prices felt penned on sheets of plastic, fragments of music from countless speakers, smells of urine, free monomers, perfume, patties of frying krill. For a few frightened seconds, he fought helplessly to control her body. Then he willed himself into passivity, became the passenger behind her eyes. The glasses didn't seem to cut down the sunlight at all. He wondered if the built-in amps compensated automatically. Blue alphanumerics winked the time, low in her left peripheral field. Showing off, he thought. Her body language was disorienting, her style foreign. She seemed continually on the verge of colliding with someone, but people melted out of her way, stepped sideways, made room.
"How you doing, Case?"
He heard the words and felt her form them. She slid a hand into her jacket, a fingertip circling a nipple under warm silk. The sensation made him catch his breath. She laughed. But the link was one way. He had no way to reply. Two blocks later, she was threading the outskirts of Memory Lane. Case kept trying to jerk her eyes toward landmarks he would have used to find his way. He began to find the passivity of the situation irritating. The transition to cyberspace, when he hit the switch, was instantaneous. He punched himself down a wall of primitive ice belonging to the New York Public Library, automatically counting potential windows, keying back into her sensorium, into the sinuous flow of muscle, senses sharp and bright. He found himself wondering about the mind he shared these sensations with. What did he know about her? That she was another professional. That she said her being, like his, was the thing she did to make a living. He knew the way she'd moved against him, earlier, when she woke, their mutual grunt of unity when he'd entered her, and that she liked her coffee black, afterward. Her destination was one of the dubious software rental complexes that lined Memory Lane. There was a stillness, a hush. Booths lined a central hall. The clientele were young, few of them out of their teens. They all seemed to have carbon sockets planted behind the left ear, but she didn't focus on them. The counters that fronted the booths displayed hundreds of slivers of Microsoft, angular fragments of colored silicon mounted under oblong transparent bubbles on squares of white cardboard. Molly went to the seventh booth along the south wall. Behind the counter, a boy with a shaven head stared vacantly into space, a dozen spikes of Microsoft protruding from the socket behind his ear.
"Larry, you in, man?"
She positioned herself in front of him. The boy's eyes focused. He sat up in his chair and pried a bright magenta splinter from his socket with a dirty thumbnail.
"Hey, Larry."
"Molly." He nodded.
"I have some work for some of your friends, Larry."
Larry took a flat plastic case from the pocket of his red sport shirt and flicked it open, slotting the Microsoft beside a dozen others. His hand hovered, selected a glossy black chip that was slightly longer than the rest, and inserted it smoothly into his head. His eyes narrowed.
"Molly's got a rider," he said, "and Larry doesn't like that."
"Hey," she said, "I didn't know you were so sensitive. I'm impressed. Costs a lot to get that sensitive?"
"I know you, lady."
The blank look returned.
"You looking to buy some softs?"
"I'm looking for the moderns."
"You got a rider, Molly, this says."
He tapped the black splinter.
"Somebody else using your eyes."
"My partner."
"Tell your partner to go."
"Got something for the Panther moderns, Larry."
"What are you talking about, lady?"
"Case, you take off," she said, and he hit the switch, instantly back in the Matrix. Ghost impressions of the software complex hung for a few seconds in the buzzing calm of cyberspace.
"Panther moderns," he said to the Hosaka, removing the trodes. 5 minute precy.
"Ready,"
the computer said.
It wasn't a name he knew. Something new, something that had come in since he'd been in Chiba. Fads swept the youth of the sprawl at the speed of light. Entire subcultures could rise overnight, thrive for a dozen weeks, and then vanish utterly.
"Go," he said. The Hosaka had accessed its array of libraries, journals, and news services. The precy began with a long hold on a color still that Case at first assumed was a collage of some kind, a boy's face snipped from another image and glued to a photograph of a paint-scrawled wall. Dark eyes, epicanthic folds obviously the result of surgery, an angry dusting of acne across pale, narrow cheeks. The Hosaka released the freeze. The boy moved, flowing with the sinister grace of a mime pretending to be a jungle predator. His body was nearly invisible, an abstract pattern approximating the scribbled brickwork sliding smoothly across his tight one-piece. Mimetic polycarbon. Cut to Dr. Virginia Rambali, sociology, NYU, her name, faculty, and school pulsing across the screen in pink alphanumerics.
"Given their penchant for these random acts of surreal violence," someone said, "it may be difficult for our viewers to understand why you continue to insist that this phenomenon isn't a form of terrorism."
Dr. Rambali smiled. "There is always a point at which the terrorist ceases to manipulate the media gestalt, a point at which the violence may well escalate, but beyond which the terrorist has become symptomatic of the media gestalt itself. Terrorism, as we ordinarily understand it, is innately media-related. The Panther moderns differ from other terrorists precisely in their degree of self-consciousness, in their awareness of the extent to which media divorce the act of terrorism from the original socio-political intent."
"Skip it," Case said.
Case met his first modern 2 days after he'd screened the Hosaka's precy. The moderns, he'd decided, were a contemporary version of the big scientists of his own late teens. There was a kind of ghostly teenage DNA at work in the sprawl, something that carried the coded precepts of various short-lived subcults and replicated them at odd intervals. The Panther moderns were a soft-head variant of the scientists. If the technology had been available, the big scientists would all have had sockets stuffed with Microsofts. It was the style that mattered, and the style was the same. The moderns were mercenaries, practical jokers, nihilistic techno-fetishists. The one who showed up at the loft door with a box of diskettes from the Finn was a soft-voiced boy called Angelo. His face was a simple graft grown on collagen and shark cartilage polysaccharides, smooth and hideous. It was one of the nastiest pieces of elective surgery Case had ever seen. When Angelo smiled, revealing the razor-sharp canines of some large animal, Case was actually relieved. Tooth bud transplants. He'd seen that before.
"You can't let the little prick's generation gap you," Molly said.
Case nodded, absorbed in the patterns of the SenseNet ice.
This was it. This was what he was, who he was, his being. He forgot to eat. Molly left cartons of rice and foam trays of sushi on the corner of the long table. Sometimes he resented having to leave the deck to use the chemical toilet they'd set up in a corner of the loft. Ice patterns formed and reformed on the screen as he probed for gaps, skirted the most obvious traps, and mapped the route he'd take through SenseNet's ice. It was good ice, wonderful ice. Its patterns burned there while he lay with his arm under Molly's shoulders, watching the red dawn through the steel grid of the skylight. Its rainbow pixel maze was the first thing he saw when he woke. He'd go straight to the deck, not bothering to dress, and jack in. He was cutting it. He was working. He lost track of days. And sometimes, falling asleep, particularly when Molly was off on one of her reconnaissance trips with her rented cadre of moderns, images of Chiba came flooding back. Faces and Ninsei neon. Once he woke from a confused dream of Linda Lee, unable to recall who she was or what she'd ever meant to him. When he did remember, he jacked in and worked for 9 straight hours. The cutting of SenseNet's ice took a total of 9 days. "I said a week," Armitage said, unable to conceal his satisfaction when Case showed him his plan for the run. "You took your own good time."
"Balls," Case said, smiling at the screen. "That's good work, Armitage."
"Yes," Armitage admitted, "but don't let it go to your head. Compared to what you'll eventually be up against, this is an arcade toy."
"Love you, Cat Mother," whispered the Panther Modern's link man. His voice was modulated static in Case's headset.
"Atlanta Brood, looks go. Go, got it?" Molly's voice was slightly clearer.
"To hear is to obey."
The moderns were using some kind of chicken wire dish in New Jersey to bounce the link man's scrambled signal off a Sons of Christ the King satellite in geosynchronous orbit above Manhattan. They chose to regard the entire operation as an elaborate private joke, and their choice of commsats seemed to have been deliberate. Molly's signals were being beamed up from a 1-meter umbrella dish epoxied to the roof of a black glass bank tower nearly as tall as the SenseNet building. Atlanta. The recognition code was simple. Atlanta to Boston to Chicago to Denver. 5 minutes for each city. If anyone managed to intercept Molly's signal, unscramble it, synth her voice, the code would tip the moderns. If she remained in the building for more than 20 minutes, it was highly unlikely she'd be coming out at all. Case gulped the last of his coffee, settled the trodes in place, and scratched his chest beneath his black T-shirt. He had only a vague idea of what the Panther Moderns planned as a diversion for the SenseNet security people. His job was to make sure the intrusion program he'd written would link with the SenseNet systems when Molly needed it to. He watched the countdown in the corner of the screen. 2, 1. He jacked in and triggered his program.
"Mainline,"
breathed the link man, his voice the only sound as Case plunged through the glowing strata of SenseNet ice. "Good. Check Molly." He hit the simstim and flipped into her sensorium. The scrambler blurred the visual input slightly. She stood before a wall of gold-flecked mirror in the building's vast white lobby, chewing gum, apparently fascinated by her own reflection. Aside from the huge pair of sunglasses concealing her mirrored insets, she managed to look remarkably like she belonged there, another tourist girl hoping for a glimpse of Tally Isham. She wore a pink plastic raincoat, a white mesh top, loose white pants cut in a style that had been fashionable in Tokyo the previous year. She grinned vacantly and popped her gum. Case felt like laughing. He could feel the micropore tape across her ribcage, feel the flat little units under it, the radio, the simstim unit, and the scrambler. The throat mic, glued to her neck, looked as much as possible like an analgesic dermadisc. Her hands, in the pockets of the pink coat,
were flexing systematically through a series of tension release exercises. It took him a few seconds to realize that the peculiar sensation at the tips of her fingers was caused by the blades, as they were partially extruded, then retracted. He flipped back. His program had reached the fifth gate. He watched as his icebreaker strobed and shifted in front of him, only faintly aware of his hands playing across the deck, making minor adjustments. Translucent.